Welcome to another episode of Toad's Tunes. My name is Toad. Today we're sitting down with Trey Lewis as he rolls through Vegas playing Stoney's Rock and Country. We got to talk about Laughlin, friends in the business, including the likes of Nate Smith, Sam Groh, Jake Worthington. We even touched on Craig Campbell. We got into his addiction as he was younger, growing up, and exactly what it did to him to get him to where he is today. We talked about writing music, a single that just got cut by Tracy Lawrence. I'm done. Let's get to know this dude. It was fun. He came in hot. Here's Trey Lewis.
All the bends and all the breaks, all those living you learn mistakes. When I was looking for saving grace, girl, I guess God knew it was always you.
Welcome to another episode of Toad's Tunes today, Mr. Trey Lewis. I have to tell you two things. One, I've been chasing you around for about 3 years trying to get your ass here.
Damn.
Yeah, and that's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
Like when I hear an artist that I like, that's kind of what I go after.
Yeah.
That's the first one. Second one is I listened to you on a podcast last January, I think it was.
Is that Bunny's podcast?
I'm going to give you a little bit of the back history of it.
Okay.
And you'll be able to tell me who it was. But I went up, I had a band that played here. Guy says, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I don't know why, what's up? And he goes, if you drive with me in the morning, I'll give you a quarter of a cow, organic beef that he grew. He's like, it's Manti, Utah. I'm like, I don't know where that is, but I'm in.
Okay.
So drive up there. It ends up being about 40 minutes outside of Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Came home with a quarter cow. Like, I wasn't mad at it, but on the way home, I ended up spending the night, but on the way home, I just found you on some podcast, and you're talking about what you went through, the shitty part of your life, your friends,
yeah.
Your family.
Yeah.
I don't remember what podcast it was.
I do have my own podcast, and it's called DM Monday, but like,
I don't think it was that one.
It could have been like My Highway podcast. I did that last year.
It was.
But I did a lot, man. I was like, during COVID, like when Dig Down in Dallas was popping off, I was on Bussing with the Boys.
Right.
You know?
Did you talk about, I'm going to have to go back and find out what it was.
But I always talk about my past, you know what I mean? That's like a big part of who I am, and a lot of people like don't know that part about me. You know?
And they should.
They're just like, oh, Dig Down in Dallas guy, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I had a buddy hit me up earlier, and he was like, man, I just walked into this bar in Panama City. He was like, I guess you're famous, the lead singer of Smash Mouth is singing your song. I was
My
song is famous. I am not famous.
Did you write that?
Dig Down in Dallas?
Yeah.
No, my friends wrote it. It was just a joke during COVID. And the big guy that you met downstairs, yep. Mitch, he was my roommate at the time. He was like, dude, if this song was out right now, I'd buy it. And he was like, you should download this app called TikTok. And I was like, went in my room, thought about it for a minute, and I was like, fuck it, let's do it.
Right.
You know, I don't give a shit. I've been putting out music since 2013. Nobody ever gave a fuck.
Right.
And yeah, man, we just fucking sent it and started. I remember one day I sent a fucking video on TikTok, and 3 hours later I looked back and it had 4 million views. And
crazy.
We put the song out. It's Billboard number one. We beat BTS that week in sales.
Like, I mean, that's something to look at, right?
I had every label in town offering me deals. But, dude, it really breaks my heart that you've been trying to get me up here because I've been wanting to play here.
Yep.
I dated this girl that like used to work here.
Who's that?
In Nashville.
Cora.
Cora, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't really date, but we were hanging for a little while. She was cool. I texted her today and told her I was finally playing here. So
that's funny. Yeah. She worked here quite a few years ago. I actually went back for an ACM honor show a couple years ago, and it was out at the amphitheater. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that thing is called.
Ascend.
Yeah, Ascend. Yeah. And I was walking, and she just ran up to me. She's like, Toad. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, how are you, man? I haven't seen her in a while. But
yeah, she's cool. And then I played Craig Campbell's Christmas thing.
Love him.
Sam Groh's a good buddy of mine. He came on our podcast, and he was like, oh, dude, you're going to love Toad. He was like, and you're going to love Stoney's. It's going to be awesome. I just want everybody to make money. You know what I mean? And that's like always my thing. It's like,
it's got to be win-win.
I don't care about making money. I just like, I want to come to a venue that I've never played before, and I don't have to sell it out. Like, I just want to build markets. You know what I mean? I want to like do enough to get another play. You know what I mean?
It's kind of funny that there's like a blueprint to this place. And it's like, I've been working with Sam for a couple of years on shows, and you can't overplay Vegas.
Yeah.
It's tough. We found that out real quick with a couple different things. With bigger artists, it still doesn't matter. If you play it too often, they don't come, which is weird. And the other part is you just have to show them that you're human.
Yeah.
And because Vegas, I like to say this, everyone's first time here. You been to Vegas before?
No.
This is your first time?
Well, I was not when I was on tour with Kid Rock last year. We went to Reno, and then we played in Laughlin. So we drove through here.
Right.
But like,
well, think about it
like
this.
I feel like Laughlin is like the I don't know, the Make-A-Wish version of Vegas. Our hotel smelled like cat piss and fucking kitty litter, dude.
Dude, it's so great. I've never heard that analogy before, but yeah. I like it. But in Vegas, you can do anything and get anything. Like, it is the one place, I think, in the world where you can literally go, and no matter what you want, it's available. But when people come to your show here at Stoney's, they're here for your show at Stoney's. And that's kind of a neat thing, and you got to think about it that way. And that's why I tell people that after your show, go out and be human. Hang out with them. Have a beer with them. You'll be surprised that they'll tell 10 of their friends next time you come here, and then all of a sudden you'll sell the place out.
For sure.
I like to tell the old story. The blueprint is Russell Dickerson. First time he played here, 250 people showed up.
Yeah.
Last two times he played here, sold out both of them. That's was the first time.
He's a great dude. Too,
yeah.
Man.
The first time yours wasn't even on radio yet. Wow. That he sold it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just, because he would go out after the show and he would just hang out with the people and they would be like, this guy's fucking cool. Then he started jumping into the crowd and singing with the crowd and just being human again.
Yeah.
I think what you guys are doing tonight is pretty rad with the money thing. That's never been done here before. Yeah. There's a couple of things. Last year, we've never had a stage dive before, and Michael Ray played here, and Travis Pastrana showed up and jumped out into the crowd.
Yeah, I'm too fat for that. You know what I mean? I ain't going to be doing that. You might end up with some lawsuits or something. You,
you might.
Trey Lewis jumped to my arm and broke it.
Right, and Jimmy's.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking funny. First time in Vegas. I love it. You guys got here today?
We got here today. We played in Arizona last night.
Where are you at tomorrow?
We are in Tucson tomorrow.
Arizona, Vegas, back to Arizona.
Yeah, you know, routing never makes sense on these things.
West Coast is tough, dude.
But, dude, we love it, man. It's fine. It's all good.
Have you played down at Moonshine yet in
San
Diego?
We played there Wednesday night.
How was that?
It was a blast, man.
It's a fun town. You play flats or beach?
San
Diego or PB?
San Diego.
San Diego, so you played the big one.
Yeah.
That's rad. Did people come out?
It was good, yeah. We had like 300 people in
there.
It was cool.
That's freaking badass.
On a Wednesday night, dude. It was awesome.
I do a lot of booking with Michael down there, so it's kind of fun because he does shows on off nights. So it makes it easier for me. Like, he does a Wednesday, Thursday. I can do a Friday here. Like, we've done quite a few shows like that where we share. It makes sense for you guys because what I want to do is, even though we have the ability to do fly dates, which is rad because we have everything here. The idea behind it is, like, I would rather you guys come out here for 2-3 days and make some money, you know, if you're going to make the trip out here. But a lot of artists, it's just straight through. They come here and play, and they go right back to Nashville again or Texas or whatever
That's
it
wild.
Is. Yeah, it kind of works that way.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to come out here, I want to be out here for a couple of days.
You should. Know? Well, Vegas, is it's its own beast, man. It
like,
really
I'm grateful that we have a show tomorrow and that we had one last night, but I would like to be out here for, like, a couple of days and just – spend time in Vegas.
There's a lot to see, and if you're a foodie, there's a lot of food, and if you smoke weed, there's a lot of weed.
Yeah.
So I hear.
Yeah.
So I hear. Let's go back to, I want to talk about, like, you had a rough past.
Yeah,
like,
man.
Personal stuff. I like to, I sat in here with Nate Smith, and his story is pretty rad, because he went to Nashville. And
I love Nate, dude.
We met,
like, right after COVID, man.
Yeah.
It didn't
work for him, so he goes back to Paradise, loses everything. His friends get him back to Nashville again. He's on top of the world now.
Yeah.
I love
7 weeks, 6 weeks at number one right now?
Yeah, six
with
or
world
seven.
World on fire.
Yeah, that's badass, man.
And he's still just the same dude.
Yep.
Goofy, funny.
I heard from him on Thanksgiving. I heard from him on Christmas, which is rad. He's just a neat, like, him and I, for some reason, we just got along real well and shoot the shit. He's a neat dude, which is rad. But I love hearing how his story, how he didn't quit, and you're kind of the same thing. The podcast I listened to that you were on, you fucked over your family, you fucked over your friends, you just, but that's what I think addiction does.
That's what it does, man. It's like it put a steering column in my neck and drove me to, you know, to do some of the craziest things that I never thought I would do, you know, drug addiction sucks because it's like you hurt the people that are the closest to you.
Sure.
You know, and while you're in that and you're living in that shit show, you know, you're just like, fuck it, I'm not hurting anybody but myself, you know, but the truth is you're really just
affects
destroying
everyone
your
you.
Life, man. Yeah. It's awful.
At what point in all that did it just hit you that, like, what was the trigger that just stopped it?
I just got to a point where it wasn't fun for me anymore, you know? Obviously, I mean, the whole reason that I ever drank or did drugs or any of that stuff is because I liked the way it made me feel.
Sure.
You know?
Is it because of that feeling of you didn't have a care in the world or you didn't think about anything, or was just the way it...
I just like to be fucked up,
right.
You know what I mean? Not exist, you know, basically. And, but I mean, and it was fun, you know, I got a thrill out of selling drugs and, you know, doing shit I wasn't supposed to be doing.
Right.
But it came to a point to where I was just like, I sold dope too. So, like, you know, weed, pills, cocaine,
sure,
you,
whatever,
you name it. And it just came.
I'm your pusher, baby.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was really good at it until I wasn't. You know, I think there's with addiction, there's we all have that line. You know, and some people walk up to that line and they're like, okay, I gotta tone it back. I gotta like maybe quit drinking for a month or anything like
sure.
that.
Sure, dry
but
January.
I just like walked up to the line and straight over it and just kept going. And I think there's that invisible line that people cross. Where there's just, you know, no return. You know,
right.
It's like a cucumber to a pickle. Once you're a pickle, there's no going back.
Right.
And I just got myself in that pickle, man, and there was just no turning back. And, you know, I would switch from this drug to that drug and find that perfect little combination for a little while, but it was always just more and more and more until, like, I don't know, man. I was just like, every time I drank, I just drink in a blackout, wake up like a week later, and, you know, what the fuck happened?
Wow.
Just miserable, you know, and I mean, I was young, man. I was 19, you know. I started drinking when I was 13. I got drunk for the first time when I was 13.
With friends?
Oh, yeah, with friends, yeah.
Beer?
Yeah, beer. I drank 9 beers and threw up. We ruined this house. My friend, he had to get all new furniture. And that dude was crazy as hell, man. He's like in a group home / psych ward now. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he like tried to kill his stepdad or something. Yeah.
He knows how to party.
Yeah. But anyways.
Were you doing music prior to that?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I always loved country music, and, like, my family grew up loving, like, karaoke, and I had uncles that played guitar, and I would get drunk and sing, you know, but never, like, I don't know. I was thinking about it today. Like, every now and then I'll be, like, taking a shower, just doing some random task, brushing my teeth, and I'll think about something that I did when I was fucked up. I remember one time I walked around this, like, concert they had. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. They had, like, a crawfish boil or something. And I was walking around drunk and just telling people that I was going to be on CMT one day, you know? And, like, I didn't even play music, you know?
Right.
But it's, like, even though I've been sober for 16 and a half years now, like, I think about those kind of things, and I'm just like, ooh, that's cringe. But, hey, guess what? I was right. I am
so you don't drink
CMT.
It all now?
No, I'm completely sober.
No weed? No
nothing? Weed, no anything.
Nothing. That's just nicotine?
Just women and nicotine. And
well, women's
caffeine.
A drug, too. That
yeah.
might be a little bit more expensive and a little bit
yeah.
more therapy. But
Yeah. But, I mean, I take good care of myself. I do. I go to therapy and... You know, I do all the stuff, so...
That's rad, dude.
Yeah,
so, man. I mean, I guess the point... I mean,
but if I didn't tell you I was sober, you might not know. You know what I mean? I'm pretty wild.
You have a good time.
Yeah, I have a good time.
It's funny that I don't drink. I might have one or two sips of something a year. Mm-hmm. If that. It's very rare that I drink. But I have a lot of friends that knew me when I used to drink. I never got a DUI. I wasn't nearly...
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem or anything like that. I just hate the way it made me feel. I hate hangovers, and I like to be able to go, you know what, I want to fucking leave. And if you're drunk, you can't leave. You can't,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you could, but then you go to jail and shit like that. But I have friends that my buddy Jay down in San Diego always, when I if he sees me with a beer in my hand, he always says, make Toad great again. Like,
yeah.
That's their whole, I'm like, I'm fun without that shit.
Yeah.
I just have a good time. I'm kind of
yeah.
like the same way.
Yeah.
But that's, so you fix yourself, per se, for the most part, right? And
yeah.
then you just start getting into music?
So I went to rehab. I finally, like, went to jail for, like, the last time. And, like, yeah. So every
like,
time.
Hey, Trey.
That's what, I mean, that's basically what happened is, like, I got to a point to where I was, like, drinking, getting fucked up all the time. And every time I, like, got fucked up, I always ended up in jail, psych ward, or some kind of bullshit. And
sure.
I finally just, like, I had some court stuff hanging over my head. I finally got like really good arrested, and I went to like I went to county jail for like 34 days.
That's
like,
a long time.
Yeah, for me it was. I mean, it was the longest. I'd done juvie. I did a month in juvie at one point, and like, you know, but every time I ever wanted to quit before then, it was always like, I'll quit. I want to, you know, I'll quit doing all this shit just to get my parents off my back or
sure.
like whatever. But this time I'll never forget. I went to jail. I used to get emotional talking about this, but I've told the story so many times. It's kind of lost its effect. But I remember in jail you get phone time, you know. And, dude, I had one of those bonds where all I had to do was have somebody sign my bond and I could have got out.
Right.
And I remember going to the phone. And just, I wanted to call one person that could just be like, yeah, man, you're all right, dude. Like, I got you, bro. Like, I got your back, you know, like, you're good. You have a good heart, you know. And I remember just the feeling in the pit of my stomach. There was nobody to call because
I just
screwed everybody over.
Sure.
You know? And that was just the ultimate shithole feeling of, you know, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair, man. It was just like utter defeat.
That's at wit's end.
Yeah. Yeah. And I finally got out. I had some friends come pick me up. And I told them that day, I was like, I'm done with this shit. And I really meant it. Like, I really meant it. And then that night I got fucked up. And then I just went on a 3-month bender. And I realized that once I put the shit in my body, there's no stopping.
Right.
I'm never going to be this guy that can just smoke weed. I'm going to smoke weed, then I'm going to smoke crack. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's how it goes for me. So I went to treatment. I was there for 2 weeks. In treatment, I got a nice letter from my family that said, hey, you can't come home until your court date or sentencing. You got to go to, extended treatment. So I was like, well, fuck, I guess I can't go home. My mom was trying to get me to go to this place called Teen Challenge. I read the pamphlet. They said you couldn't smoke or cuss. So I was like, I'll get kicked out the second week.
You're like, fuck this place.
Somebody was like, why don't you try praying about it? And dude, like, I didn't grow up going to, I grew up going to church, but like, I didn't know the necessity for a higher power or anything like that. I didn't know what any of it was about. I didn't know the Serenity Prayer. I didn't know the Lord's Prayer. I just went in my room and I got down on my knees. I said, God, if there is a God, if you're real, I need some fucking help.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to keep living like this. I got off my knees and I opened my door at the rehab and my counselor was at my door. She said, hey, there's this guy on the phone. Come talk to him. His name's Robbie Keeble. He said, what's up, man? This is Robbie. I know you're getting out of rehab tomorrow. I'm going to come pick you up and bring you to this halfway house. And
God listen.
Yeah,
man.
Robbie Keeble saved my life, dude. I mean, he was the owner. I mean, he's a well-known guy in Birmingham in the, you know, recovery community. And, you know, he owns a couple of halfway houses and is just a big...
That's a good man, man.
Big component there. I mean, dude, like, he didn't have to drive. You know, the treatment center was 40 minutes away from, you know, Birmingham.
Where you were, right.
He didn't have to come up there. He could have sent one of his, like,
one
of his guys.
How did he hear about you?
So they send, like, that treatment center, Bradford, they send, like, a lot of people there, like, a lot of younger guys,
you know. They just know you needed extra help.
And they know I needed help, and
that's fucking amazing,
and my
dude.
Family was able to, like, pay my first month's rent and shit, so they were like, you know. This
so
kid.
When do
so
you,
I went to the halfway house. Yeah.
When do you start writing music and playing music and all that?
So I go through the 12 steps. I'm going to AA pretty frequently. Ninth step comes up, and I got to start making amends to people. And I went to my dad, and I just told him, I was like, "Look, man, like I know I've screwed you over, and I did this, and that, and probably a whole bunch of laundry lists long as shit that I don't even remember I did, but I just need to know what I can do to make that right between you and me, because me and my dad's relationship was so fucked up, dude. Like,
I could only imagine.
I could go on forever, but I won't. I'll keep it short. And he just looked at me, and he said, look, I just want you to keep doing what you're doing, like, because something's working. He was like, I don't get it.
How old were you at that point?
19.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
You're still a kid.
Yeah, I went to treatment when I was 19. I'm 36 now, so, yeah.
Wow.
And I tell you what, man, after I told my, made amends to my father, he asked me to move in with him. And
Mom and dad weren't together?
No. Okay. My parents had been divorced since I was 3.
They didn't drink or anything?
Oh, yeah, they did.
They did.
My mom partied hard.
Does she still party?
God bless her. Yes. Yeah. So cool. I just want to touch on a couple things real quick.
Do it.
So I move in with my dad. Me and my dad become best friends. I was 6 months sober, bought a guitar, taught myself how to play it. My dad, man, he was, like, so proud of me. He was just, like, he would always tell me, he would be like, man, I don't know what you're doing, but just keep doing this music thing. It's all going to work out for you. 7 years sober, I was playing in the Mexican restaurants. I had my second gig.
Where at? In
Birmingham.
Birmingham,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Played the Mexican restaurant, made my $150.
All covers?
Yeah, all covers.
Okay.
Putting my PA in my car, little Honda Civic. I was going to the beach the next day with my family, my mom's side of the family. And I was married. I got married when I was 22. To a girl that was sober at the time. And I gave my dad a hug, and I pulled out my 7-year chip, and I gave it to him, and I told him how much I loved him and how much I appreciated him, you know, giving our relationship a second chance and all this stuff, and I gave him a big hug.
Or a 10th chance.
Yeah, a 10th chance. And I could still feel that hug, man. And then I came back home from the beach, and I got a call, and he died. He had a massive heart attack.
Dude, come on.
Yeah, he had a massive heart attack in the...
That same day?
That same week. Like,
dude,
I went
like
to the
hair on my neck is standing up right now.
And it rocked my fucking world, dude.
Yeah, but...
But looking back on it now, you can't write a better story ending to that shit right there. You know what I mean? And that's what, like... That's what I love now. I mean, like, there's so many things. I like the fact that I went viral and like really started my music career with a song like "Dick Down in Dallas" is like hilarious because I know my dad is in heaven. Like,
laughing.
Fuck yeah!
This is the
like
gem.
When I first got my guitar, we used to sit around and like just fucking write stupid songs. Like, we wrote this one song. It was like everybody gets molested when they're a little kid. Like. Just like crazy.
The fuck?
Like me and my dad, we just you know,
funny, right?
We were just like bros, you know what I mean? And I don't know, man. He got to see my first full band show and just, you know, but there's so many things like keep doing what you're doing, you know, a long time ago when I was a 19-year-old kid trying to figure out how to get sober means so much more now that he's fucking not here anymore. You know what I mean? That means fucking even today I get up and I stay sober another day. I'm making that amends to my father, man.
You are.
And
he's
I can
watching.
Live on that shit.
He's still
you know?
Watching you, man.
And that's cool to me, you know?
I like to tell this little bit of a story. You talk about God. I believe in God. I was confirmed Catholic, was an altar boy, did all that stuff. I don't go to church on a regular basis, but Larry Fleet came out with that song.
That's where I found God.
Dude, I ride my dirt bike.
Yeah.
And I'm out... It's my freedom. I put my music in, and he's on every playlist whenever I'm riding, and I hear that tune, and it makes me feel that it's okay.
Yeah.
That's I can talk to him. It doesn't matter if you go to church. I don't think that defines your love of God
for
or
sure.
your faith or anything
churches
like that.
Churches ruin everything, honestly, bro.
Sometimes I'll agree
with
you.
Unpopular opinion, but it is. It is.
But the end of the day is it's like I think if you can go out and find that peace and, you know, it's your story. You know, at the end of the day, when you die and you go meet your maker, some people believe in it. I've got friends that are atheist as hell, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's going to come that day. You know, God's going to forgive them for it because whatever they were taught, they were taught. But it's crazy. Dude, I love that story. I think people are like that haven't heard it before are going to like
sit
back and
shit. Yeah, man, I think that my greatest asset is a human being because, like, I think this world, like, who we are as people is about what we give back to this place. You know what I mean?
What
like,
you leave it with, man. Make it a
better
place.
Yeah, what you leave here. And, like, you know, success and all that shit's cool, man. But, like, you can't fucking load that shit up and take it to the next place with you.
Nope.
You know what I mean? But what you can take and what you can leave is the character that you fucking build.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, like, I think that my greatest asset is my story that some of it hasn't been told yet. But, man, I'm getting chances to, you know, like I wrote this song called 3 Feet Tall and Cole Swindell put it out like a month ago. I got my first major label cut. It's fucking exciting.
It's huge.
I pitched a song to Tracy Lawrence. Me and him met. I was on his podcast. He was on mine. And his manager went to college with my manager, which was totally weird because my manager's like not a Nashville guy, you know, he's like Birmingham. But I sent him a song, and he fucking cut it. It's coming out in February.
He cut a couple years ago, Jeremy McCombs' single.
Yeah.
And I love the idea. The thing about Vegas that's weird, I'll tell you with music, is it's nothing like Nashville, where people care about the writers. Like, Ray Filcher's played here before.
Love Ray.
But you sit back and you put Ray in an environment that people care about the writers.
Yeah.
He crushes.
Yeah.
Crushes. But here... It's just one of those things that they play, and it's like, oh, he's playing a cover. No, man, he wrote that one.
Yeah.
You sit back, and it's like, it's nuts. Always You?
Always You, yeah.
My God, let's talk about that.
Yeah, man.
Like, I heard that song for the first time and about shit myself because I'm like, that is a badass tune.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty cool. So I've been doing all these, like, radio shows. We're doing secondary radio right now. It's top 40 on the...
really?
On the, whatever, the secondary...
Music Row, is that
the
Music
Media
Row?
Base.
Media
Base.
Okay. That's
chart,
like Music
is,
Row, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, Music Row. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's number 40 or 42 or something like that. But anyways, I did the radio call the other day, and, you know, they can't mention Dick Down in Dallas. They can't say it on the radio, but they're like, it's funny to us how you, or is it cool to you how, like, you had a song that was, like, the number one bachelorette song of 2020 and so on, and then now you've got a wedding song. You're, like, showing up to weddings playing this, like, heartfelt love ballad.
I would get a little bit different, just shock and awe. Just play Dick Down in Dallas instead of that one.
Yeah, dude, it kind of sucks. And I love being on podcasts because, like, on podcasts, you can really tell the truth, you know? Like, I originally put that song out about this girl that I was dating, and, like, 4 days before it came out, she broke up with me.
Seriously?
Yeah. But it kind of sucks.
It's a neat tune, man. I mean,
but like, the coolest thing about it is that, like, on TikTok and shit like that, there's, like, over, like, 30,000 videos or something. So getting to see what it means to other people is really cool. And I got a new girlfriend, and she's way hotter and cooler than the other one. So, like, you know, sometimes you just have to, like, you know, sometimes you just have to, like, repurpose songs, and my new girl's okay with that.
Well, you know? Sit back, like, Ashley Cook was just here not too long ago, and I think every one of her songs is, like, about a shitty dude.
Yeah, and, it's been a year.
And her man was here that night because he plays guitar with Lily Rose, and I know him, and I'm, like, watching the two of them, like, how the fuck do you go to a show and listen to her sing about what a douchebag her ex was? And, like, but it's just music, man, that stuff.
Well, you know, Nashville's a small town. Everybody knows who that was.
Yeah. It's kind of nuts that when you think about the whole thing with everybody, even like Alexander Kay just rolled through, and she has that song Ever Leave. I don't know if you've listened to that song
before.
Dude,
she's so authentic, man. My God. She's awesome, dude.
She got off the stage.
She just does her thing, man. And like,
I had the neatest experience with her. She got off stage during a sound check, and I was talking to her manager, Beth, and she got off the stage, didn't know who I was, and she goes, I think I need to change my set. And she was talking to Beth, and Beth goes, why? And she goes, well, I watched the socials last night. They have a DJ. There's go-go girls. There's line dancing. I should play to the crowd. And I said, hi, I'm Toad. And she freaked out because she'd heard about me and finally got to meet her. And she's been trying to get in here forever. And I go, don't. You do what you do. That's it. And so the middle of her set, she got up there and she broke down and told the story of what we did that afternoon. I just happened to be standing on the side of the stage with my daughter at that time. She's legal. and she said, it's people like this that make this industry worthwhile, because she's an independent artist.
Yes.
I don't want her playing fucking 20 covers. I wanted her to play her original music. That's what I build this platform for, and that's what I want. I've had artists come through, and the first time they play a lot of covers, I'm like, here's the deal. I love the way you sing. I love your band. I love your attitude, but don't ever fucking come back here and do that again. Go write some more shit if you need to, or play mostly originals. If you start to lose the crowd, throw a cover in there. Other than that, that's what they're here for.
Yeah, we keep enough covers in the set, but we play, I got a full-length album coming out this year, so
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to play the Cole Swindell cut just because it's cool.
Talk about it. Let them know, man. Yeah. Tell the story.
Yeah.
You fish.
I fish. I do a lot of bass fishing.
I'm looking at the Pawpaw's Bait and Tackle.
Yeah, so this is my new brand that I started.
That's
check
you?
It out. Yeah,
is Pawpaw your dad?
Pawpaw was my grandfather. He was a Korean War and a World War II veteran, and he was crazy as hell. So my real name is Lewis Edward Thomason III.
Lewis Edward Thomason III. So where's Trey come from?
Because I'm a third. Uno, dos, tres.
Trace. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So have you always been the nickname of Trey?
Yeah, my name's always been Trey. And
that's pretty right.
Thomason is like, people always say Thompson or Thomason. So I just like Trey Lewis, 2012, changed my artist name to that. And it's just been that ever since. But Lewis is my grandfather's. My dad went by Ed for Edward. And then.
Is this a store or is it just a.
No. Me and Mitch Wallace, he's on my podcast. He does my social media. He was my roommate, guy that convinced me to put Dick Down in Dallas out. We wanted to make a brand that honored our grandfathers.
Okay.
And my grandfather taught me how to fish. He taught me how to drive. You know, I spent all my summers with him. And he was
Birmingham?
Okay. It was like Pell City. I grew up going to the lake and stuff. But his name was Pawpaw. So we wanted the hats to look like a hat that an old man would buy at the convenience store, like the country store, you know, the family-owned place. And I got this little American flag pin on it. Yeah. So Pawpaw's Bait and Tackle is the first hat we made. We got a Pawpaw's Auto Sales. It's like red and khaki. And then we've got We've got guns and ammo for hunting, and it's camouflage. So
let's have some fun.
But I was just like, man, I was just like, dude, I'm getting paid, you know, whatever X amount of dollars to fucking wear somebody else's brand. I'm gonna make my own brand. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
We're gonna have some fun real quick. This All is right, mine.
Let's do it. Yeah,
it's IamFamousEnough.com.
Yeah,
and since we're on a podcast and we tell the truth,
yeah,
on the website I have a story of what it's for, and it fits very, very well.
Yeah.
And it's about a dopamine fix that the kids get. Like if they post something and they get a like, if they only get 10 likes and their friend gets 100, it's depressing, right?
Yeah.
It's sad. You're famous enough. And self-comparison's horrible. But the reality is about 2.5-3 years into these podcasts, iHeart came to me and said, I want you to take it off Spotify, take it off iTunes, take it off your website. I used to have Country AF Radio. Take it off of that. I want you to put it all in the iHeart app. I said, oh, that's rad. So you guys are going to monetize that, right? They said, yeah. I said, well, what do I get out of it? And they looked me square in the face and said, we'll make you famous. And what came out of my mouth was, I'm famous enough. 2 weeks later, I had it on a shirt. Now I've got like, I don't know, 8 or 9 shirts, 4 or 5
that's
hats,
fucking awesome,
koozies,
dude.
All kinds of shit.
I want a shirt. You got any shirts with you?
I can have.
You can just mail them to me.
I will. I'll do a trade with you.
Yeah, that's cool.
I will rock that shit. But this is, I just dropped this one Monday.
Yeah.
And it says, hustle and stay humble.
I love that.
Because how many fucking people out there hustle and they get a top of the world? I'm not going to mention any names, Jimmy Allen. And they're just pieces of fucking shit.
Yeah.
You know, once they feel that, that was honesty. It's a podcast.
That's all good, man. That's what you got to do. Man, I like, the thing is just like, we all got to grind, baby.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, ain't nobody out here gonna do nobody no favors. You just gotta fucking grind,
but
and that's all you get.
When you get up there,
you don't
treat
be
people
good.
Like shit.
Be good to people.
I just posted something today on my Instagram. It just says, "Be kind, man. It's a thing."
Yeah, there's a
it
different.
Really
you
is.
Know, there's character and there's being a fucking character. Which one are you? You know what I mean,
dude? That's a fuck T-shirt.
Yeah,
I'll have to talk about that one.
Yeah,
Dylan Carmichael, you know him?
Yeah, love him, dude.
So,
we met over COVID. And we did some fishing together.
He is such a rad dude. So he came here to
and
do
his
a radio
wife,
show.
Shayla, she's
cool.
Awesome, dude.
They came here and did a radio show, and I got a phone call, and they're like, dude, let's go have dinner. And I'm like, what? Don't you have a radio show? And he's like, I'm done with this shit. So we went and had a burger, and we're sitting there. It was me and his drummer, and the story came out of, he's like, I've always wanted to put something on the shirt. And it was like, don't tell me, because if you tell me, I'm going to put it on a shirt. So he's got this shirt out right now that says Nashville Recording Artist.
Yeah.
I did that shirt.
Nice.
I did it with him. And on the inside, it says DCAT, and it's Dylan Carmichael and Toad. And it's like a shirt that we keep joking about because you guys get it.
Yeah.
I get it. The average person doesn't get it. But we talked about putting on a shirt, and like 2 weeks later, I had an artist roll through here, and his TM gave me a piece of paper of what he wanted me to say when the artist got up there, and it said Nashville Recording Artist. And I like had the piece of paper, and I'm standing on stage announcing the band. I'm like, I can't fucking read this. I will never read this because not one time did Axl Rose go, I recorded this one in L.A. Not one fucking time. Just be the artist, man. And that's kind of like my attitude towards it is just fucking do it.
Nashville Recording Artist, Trey Lewis.
I'm not doing
it. I expect you to be like, look like a toad or something. Why do people call you Toad? What's the story there?
You see Gran Torino?
Yes.
Clint Eastwood, fucking love him.
Yeah.
But do you remember the little Asian kid? He called him Zipperhead, called him Slam
Eye.
Yeah. Remember when he finally went over and he ate dinner down in the basement?
Yeah.
Well, called him Toad and said, hey, Toad, you better go get some of that yum-yum before someone else does because that cute girl was looking at him. A few of us here at work, 2009, we went to the movie and we kind of like got nicknames. Yum-yum is a girl that worked here. She got married. Her husband didn't like it anymore, so we quit calling her Yum-yum. She went by Jamie, but I stuck with Toad. And when I left the business here for about a year, and when I came back, my nickname was Toad still, but like that was like 2011 or something like that. I'm like, God, do I keep Toad? My real name is Jeff. Do I go, like, what do I do here? And I'm like, fuck, there's no Toads in this industry.
Yeah.
And I've been in music since 99. I've been helping bands. I got a couple feathers in my cap with helping some pretty big bands get deals. And I just love the underdog, and that's what I love. And so I'm like, Toad's the perfect name for me. I've got a caricature because I flip everyone off. I always wear my hat backwards, so I have this caricature of a toad like this, and it's just a thing. I mean, you go to Nashville and you talk about Toad, people know who I am. They're in the music business, so it's a lot better
That's
than
awesome.
Saying, "Hey, you know Jeff in Vegas?" I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a regular fucking dude.
Yeah,
you know?
Toad,
so it's,
man.
It's kind of Toad.
Yeah, I mean, dude. I mean, I went to that Craig Campbell Christmas thing at his coffee shop in Eagleville. They were like, "Man, you're gonna love Toad." So. That's pretty cool.
Craig is a rad dude. I mean, you think about, I don't know, I treat everybody the same. I had this thing, Luke Combs played here in 2016, and he opened for Corey Smith.
Yeah. And they love Corey too, man.
Well, ironic.
Funny story about him. Go ahead.
Two tour managers, they didn't get along. Well, the hurricane was just hitting the highway.
Yeah.
So Luke's getting all this love, right? Yeah. And you've got Corey, who's been grinding for like since you were in diapers, right? Dude. And so those two didn't get along. What we used to do with the bands is there was a barbecue place here. So we would say, hey, do you want a buyout or do you want to go eat? If you go eat, I just got to make a call. You go over there. No drinks. We take care of the food, whatever. Well, Corey's tour manager looked at me, wouldn't even look at. Fuck, I forgot his name.
Cappy?
No, his tour manager. Oh, he's still with him. I have his name in my phone.
Yeah, I can't think of it either.
But needless to say, didn't look at him and he goes, yeah, we don't eat with them. And I just went, and I looked at the other, Ethan. I looked at Ethan. I said, Ethan, man, just hold on. Let me take care of this. I go, do you want the bite? He goes, he did. I go, Ethan, I'll be right back when I got the money. Well, those guys left, and I looked at Ethan. I said, listen, I don't care who's who. I don't care who's on top of the world and who's not. At that time, you would kind of say that Corey Smith was in a better place than Luke was, like in this industry. And I said, I don't care who's bigger. Well, Cappy came in that night. He's like, dude, thanks for taking care of my boy. And I'm just like, dude, everybody's the same in my book. There is no – but – I mean, Luke's been such a good dude. I ran into Cappy just a couple years ago. I was in over Thanksgiving. I ran into him in Nashville. And he got out of his car, saw me walk in because I was walking right in front of I was walking to the Hutton, Hattie B's.
Yeah.
He was right next door to there getting in his car. And he got out, gave me a hug. And he was like, dude, how have you been? And I'm like, I've been good. And they just rolled through here, him, Ash McBride, and Ray Fulcher. They've all played here before. Yeah. So getting to go backstage and watch these careers – Cappy's such a nice guy, and he was just like, dude, hit me up tomorrow. Let me know what you think of the show. I'm just like, dude, he's the humblest dude ever.
Yeah.
And I think that's to me is what it's all about is when you get up there, there's no reason to be a dick.
Yeah, dude, because you're going to come back down. And you're going to come back through Stoney's and play here.
You're going to try to.
Yeah, you're going
to there's some artists that have come through here that I'm just like this. Yeah. Man, there's no way. Yeah. There's no way. I mean, I kill everyone with kindness. I treat everybody the same. I'm fair. I've had artists that have sat in the back and they're like, pull out your phone. I'm like, why? And they're like, look up this email. That's like 4 years ago. And they're like, I've been trying to get in this place for 4 years. And I'm like, dude, I only got 52 dates a year. Last year on Spotify, I listened to 6,600 artists.
Damn.
That's what I do. I just listen. I love. Well,
I'm going to have to send you my record, dude.
You should.
Do you have any vinyls? You have vinyl player?
Fuck yes, I got a vinyl player.
So we're sending out these back to the Pawpaw hats. We're sending out a limited run of Pawpaw's hats. We're sending out baskets with like... my record's called Troublemaker, but we're sending out these boxes. I'll make sure you get one.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Dude, that would be rad.
Yeah.
Tell me your story about Corey.
So we had the same agent for a little while, and that's probably why you couldn't get me here. But anyways, no. I mean, he's a cool guy. We just needed somebody. Like, I don't need a big name agent. You know what I mean? I just need somebody that grinds.
Does the work.
And will fucking go out and book me. Anywhere and everywhere.
Tell Brad Austin to do it. Sam's guy.
Yeah, I like to work. Corey Smith's like one of my heroes, dude. Like, I respected his grind, you know, how he just grinded for so many years and stayed independent and, you know, things like that. Adam Hood was another one. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I've never heard of him.
He's from Alabama, but he's like a Texas guy.
I like him.
So I go to this, like, I played this thing in, like, Nashville. It was, like, post-COVID thing. It was weird. Anyways, Corey was there. My agent brought him out there and sat down at the table. And, you know, Corey's kind of, like, he can't really see that good. And he wears sunglasses. And he goes.
Makes sense.
You know what you got on your hands? And I was like, what's that? He said, you got a fuck the popo on your hands. And he said, don't ever... hate the fact that you have a fuck the popo, because there's a million motherfuckers out there that wish they had a song like Dig Down in Dallas. And I was like, amen.
He was so neat after his show. Like, I didn't have any problem with him. He was cool as shit. Yeah. It was just his TM was just weird, man.
I think he's gone through some personnel changes over the years.
He came out after his show.
That's just part of it, man.
But dude, you have to learn and grow. Yeah. That's part of everyday life, dude.
Yeah, dude. I mean, dude, like, my guys that were playing cover gigs with me for the last 10 years... Like, my boys, dude, like, I would have done anything for those guys. I did, dude. I went over and beyond. They all got in a fight, like, right before the show started in Nebraska last year. And, I mean, dude, I paid the guys well. Like, I was good to them. We got back to Nashville. They fucking quit, bro. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, but,
like, how long ago was that?
It's a year. It's been a year ago.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I mean, we're all good now. Like, we're all cool. They just, you know, man, it's just so weird going from playing four nights a week, 4 hours straight. That's what we did for 8 years.
Right.
You know, riding around an SUV, sometimes two cars. We didn't even have a van yet, you know, to having one of the biggest country songs in the world.
You
know? Yep. That affects everybody differently, you know? We just kind of went our separate ways on some things, but we're all good.
None of those guys are in the band anymore. These are all new guys.
My guitar players, new, my old drummer stayed. You might've met him, McElwain downstairs. Okay. We call him Sweet Boy. He's like our stage manager, redneck, knows how to fix everything. Like
the perfect guy.
Yeah. He's like the dude, you know? But he knew that, like, he needed to, like, step down as drummer and do something else. But these guys that we have now, they've been with us for a year, and it's been great, man. Just young Nashville guys, you know, and it's cool.
They have a dream, too.
Yeah, exactly. So some of my guys, like, didn't move to Nashville, and, you know, it's just tough. They had families and baseball games and, you know, so. But it was tough. That's all I'm saying is, like, you know, time changes people, and at the end of the day, there's only one Trey Lewis, and this is my dream, you know what I mean? And nobody's going to work harder for my dream than me. So sometimes, you know, you have to make tough choices. You know?
You're enlightening me more than you might know, right? There's like, it's good to see people, a lot of people just put on this face of who they are and what they do, but I mean, you've been through the grind, man, through the ringer, like, I've been through some shit myself. Nothing.
Like, hey, man, is this ever going to get better? Like,
you know? Well,
because, like, even with new, you know, with all this new stuff that's going on, going great. Like, we've been on this West Coast tour for the last couple of days. It's been awesome. And, but, you know, there's with every, you know, mountain you climb, there's a new challenge of hurdles.
There isn't, it's too easy. It's not life, man. Yeah. I think that every time you get thrown something, it's just time to look at it. I have a life coach. Her name is Robin, and I fucking love her, man. She, I was at Route 91. It was something that I saw some shit I never would fucking wish on people, but I talked to her every day after it. She was there for me, and I was with her last night.
Cora told me about that, man. That's crazy, dude.
It was fucking nuts. I was backstage and the shit came right over us.
Yeah.
Like, I was in a freezer truck backstage hiding. Like, it was SWAT got us. I mean, it was, but when you're walking around, you're just seeing shit that it was a movie. Like, it was surreal. Yeah. It was really surreal. It took a couple days to hit. But anyway, I was talking to her. I went to a Chris Voss book release last night. He's an FBI investigator guy. Like, and my buddy Nick Nanton has a chapter in this book. And so I was hanging out with all these guys and I go to leave and my life coach is there. And we're just talking about stuff as we're leaving. She's like, catch me up on where you've been, what's been going on. Because I don't talk to her on a regular basis anymore. And she said something to me that was really, really cool. She's like, there's this thing in life that you have to start doing. And I go, talk to me about what that is. And she goes, it's life doesn't do stuff to you.
Yeah.
Life does stuff for you.
And I woke
up this morning and I just went, man, that's just it's a new tick in a sense. Because you can sit back and go, didn't happen to me, man, it happened for me.
Yeah,
like I've got some stories. Sam's well aware of what's going on in my life and some shit that's happening. He's a good, I consider him a friend.
Yeah.
And you find these people in your life that champion who you are. And I just had lunch with John Marks. You know him. Spotify. The Highway.
Yeah.
And the first thing he said, I mean, like I sit down and have lunch with him. He just cusses at me because he's mad at me for not doing
for
things.
For booking me?
No, fuck no. Dude, I wish that in his world, he was still doing what he was doing at Spotify because I don't really listen to New Boots anymore because it's a little bit different than it used to be.
Yeah,
I think before it was about the music. And
it's all label now.
Yeah, and it's a bummer that money's just drove its way right back into it again.
Yeah.
You know, it really has.
Yeah.
I used to call the number one the entitled number one because my attitude towards any kind of music, any genre of music, is if I can listen to it in 10 years, it's fucking music.
Yeah.
But if it only lasts 6 months and you never hear from it again and it doesn't hit you the way it did, then it's not good music.
Yeah,
That's me.
There's three different kinds of artists. And it's like, all right, so you have your artists like Jelly Roll, Hardy, Lainey, you know what I mean, that are like writing, Morgan Wallen, that are at the top and fucking crushing it right now.
Yeah.
But it's like everything that they post, like people don't only love their music, they love them.
Right.
You know what I mean? They love
they have an opportunity now to get to know
them.
They
love who they are.
Right.
You know? And dude, like, I opened for Jelly Roll, like, that's a dude right there, man. He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's been through
guy.
Some shit.
Yeah. A lot of similarities,
yes,
you know?
Yes, you do. Yeah.
I don't know if he knows that or not, but, like, he's a huge inspiration for me. But I opened a mud bog for him. There was, like, maybe a couple thousand people there. Fast forward, like, a year and a half later, I opened for him in North Dakota or South Dakota, which one of the Dakotas, like, a few months back. And it was, like, record-breaking for this, like, fairground. Like,
right.
And it was awesome. But he's always been cool to me and, like, always invited me on his bus and to sing with him on stage.
He's human.
But, yeah, but like it, man, it's just crazy. I mean, I forgot what we were talking about. Where were we?
You were just talking about artists and being real.
Oh yeah, I mean, but damn, I had a point I was gonna drive home. Oh well.
Gosh darn it. We had Jelly Roll. We have another location up in Idaho.
Oh yeah,
he played there last year, and the cap is comfortable 3,050.
Oh, I know what I was gonna say. The trials and tribulations thing. You know,
yeah.
I heard him on a podcast the other day. He was on Theo Von's podcast, which I love Theo Von. He's hilarious, dude.
He's hilarious in his podcast. I don't like his
comedy.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of his stand-up.
Yeah. Same with that Matt Rife guy, dude. I love all his little shorts on TikTok, but I watched his new one on Netflix.
But his podcast, I love how Theo just, like, works on people. Like, he says something, it's like, that didn't get him, but here, I'm about to get him here.
Yeah, I'm going to try this.
Yeah, I love his podcast. But Jelly Roll is on there. He was like, yeah, man, I mean, we're doing like all these tours and stuff. He was like, you know, I'll lose money just to like add extra pyro or like extra this. And like, that's funny because even at my level, like, I still do the same shit.
Well, you're doing it tonight. I mean,
you know what I mean? Like,
you're throwing,
I'm willing to like do like to do that. But it's funny to me that even at his level, you know, there's you know, there's still that conversation there, but I know what I was saying. There's, you know, there's artists like them that's like, you know, everybody loves everything about them. And then there's artists where people just kind of like fuck with the music and don't really know about the artist, you know?
Yep.
They're like, oh, I kind of like this song. And then, you know, but if you can get both of those, dude, that's, I'm just trying to get one of them, but you know what I'm saying? It's pretty cool.
I had Megan Maroney here, and some people from Sony came out, and I walked the back wall with one of them. And it's depressing. It's depressing because there's a lot of artists on there like that are awesome. And like I pointed out some artists, I don't want to really say any names. I'll say them off the record, but they were just like, yeah, they're not going to make it. And I'm like, why? Oh, because they don't know how to sell themselves. I'm like, well, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
Like literally, they're still human, but it just bothersome to me that the industry is so, you can buy your way to the top still.
Yeah.
And that's the bummer for me because there's,
I mean, dude, like I get it. Like I understand how an artist can get tired, but no matter what, like my biggest thing is like, you just got to always be putting out music. You know what I mean? Jelly Roll put his name on an album 9 times before anybody gave a fuck, dude.
Right. Well, that's the grind.
9 times, bro.
It's the grind.
That's a lot of money.
It's the grind.
A lot of dedication.
Dude, you look at a guy like Drew Baldridge and even throw Sam Groh in that same mix, and I know they both did the same thing during COVID, and they started playing in backyards because they have this passion for music. They have this passion for their fans. They have this passion for making a fucking living. Like, to go on the road, play 100-something shows.
Dude, Drew met up with some kid that he met on TikTok and wrote a song. You know what that kid's name is? Fucking Bailey Zimmerman.
Oh, for reals?
Yeah, dude.
That's pretty rad.
That dude's awesome, man.
Are you signed? Do you have a label deal?
I'm with Riverhouse Artists.
Okay. Yep.
So it's still an independent label.
Right. I know who they are.
And that's who we're...
Management?
Lynn Oliver Klein. My manager is a guy named Alex Cape. He's been with me.
Downstairs.
Downstairs. He's selling fucking merch tonight.
Yes,
he doesn't care, dude. He's like, how are we going to make this tour work? I'm going to come out and fucking sell merch, dude.
Dude, so here's what's funny. I said to him, he introduced himself because he was asking about something. I don't know. And someone said, yeah, talk to Toad. He's right there. He's like, you're Toad? I was like, yeah. I'm like, dude, what's up, man? And I said, here's the deal tonight. I know he told me he was selling merch. I said, the girls here that have an X on their hand, they're still legal, but they're under 21. Just know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he just looked at me and smiled. He goes, man, I'm married. I got a kid coming around the corner. I'm just like, I'm just telling you, man, because you're going to look at him and be like, fuck.
Yeah.
He's a funny dude, man. I was like,
yeah, I mean, dude, that guy has literally, that's my brother, that's my family, you know.
I think,
like, I would do, like,
anything.
If it came down to it, I'd go 50-50 with him and split everything, if it, you know what I mean, like, that's my dude. He's been with me since I was playing in those Mexican restaurants.
So here's what's funny about that is I look at relationships like that, and I'm prideful of them. You look at Sam's guy, Brad, right? So I had a girl that came here. I had heard of Sam Groh before, but I didn't know him. I didn't know anything about him. I heard a song before, something like that. She went on one of those cruises that was on. She gave me Brad's number. I hit up Brad, and I'm like, I ended up listening to a lot more music by him. I'm like, I want to bring this guy out here. But I went through Brad through a friend, and then I watched their relationship. Dude, Brad came from radio. He doesn't know how to manage a band. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And the two of them just got together and, like, we're going to figure it out together. And that's, I mean, you got a guy
like
that.
Yeah, dude, I met with Alex, like, once a week for 4 months straight, or for a month straight. And he said, well, man, I don't really know anything about country music, but I like you. Let's do this, you know.
And what was he doing management before
that? He was working in the production side of things. He was a production manager at a venue in Birmingham called Zydeco.
Kind of understood the music business, right?
Yeah, yeah, and he was working for a middle agency at the time, and he took me on, and then I'll never forget one day, we were sitting in this cubicle. His boss was, like, right over here in this other cubicle, and he slid me a note across the table. He said, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Are you coming with me? And I was like, yep.
Both of you got up and left?
Yeah, I mean, like, he was just getting out of there because, like, he wasn't able to help me, you know. He wanted to start a management, you know, it's just some bush league shit.
Right.
So he knew that it was time to get out of there.
That's cool.
But yeah, man, he has a interesting story. He works in the production world. He's done shows for, you name it, lights, and, you know, he's done shit with Cedric the Entertainer. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
on.
Yeah, dude, he's so, I mean, that guy knows how to work, man. He's not he's on this tour selling fucking merch. You know what I mean?
It's the grind. Yeah, I was telling him, I said, one thing we don't do, because I know that they asked about a merch seller. It's one thing the answer is no.
Yeah.
And the Yum Yum girl, Jamie, I told you about one night. She used to work here. She doesn't work here anymore. But she said, I'm just going to help him with merch. And she got done that night. She goes, I'm never fucking doing that again. Because it was one of those things where I gave
you
14
start
teachers.
At 7, and you don't quit until
the last thing.
The last thing.
Well, the other side of it all is if my thing is I don't want to be in the middle between a band and the club. And that just opens a door for hell, because you could say, yeah, you counted in 14 shirts, but only got 13. Where's the money?
Yeah.
You know, and that's just a fucking nightmare. Like,
And merch selling, dude, is a whole nother grind in itself.
Is.
You got to be good at it.
Well,
know?
And you guys have a setup, which is rad. I want to ask you one more thing. Right. Your favorite song so far that you've been a part of?
Yeah.
What is it? Like, what's the one song that you look at and don't tell me Dick Down and Dials?
No.
The one that
can it just be a song that I've written?
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be one that's not out.
So I wrote this song called Out Here In It, and I know I'm probably passing this on a little too early, but Tracy Lawrence cut it. I talked about it earlier.
Beautiful.
I've done a bunch of dumb shit over the last couple of years, but I bought this $20,000 kayak. Like it's called a Hobie 360.
What the fuck? Does it have a motor in it?
it had a motor in it. And, like, dude, it was so stupid. I have a bass boat. I shouldn't have fucking bought the thing. But I ended up selling it and trading it and putting some of the electronics in my bass boat. Anyways, but I'm too fat to be out in that thing, you know. But I was out there fishing one day, and I caught a couple of fish, and I said, man, but at the time I hadn't caught anything, and I was like, man, I might not be catching any fish right now, but I'm fucking out here in it, and, you know, at least I'm out here in it. And I fucking got my phone, and I typed that title in, Out Here In It, and then the second verse of that song, you know, basically says, maybe love ain't in my cards, you know, and it talks about being in this relationship on again, off again, and on again, the worst and the best that I've ever been, and, you know, I just went through this 3-year relationship, dude, where it was like on and off, break up, get back together.
Those are not healthy.
Get back together. And, dude, honestly, for a sober dude, like, it was fucking hard, man. Like, I didn't think about drinking, you know. I haven't thought about getting fucked up in a long time. But, like, it was mentally exhausting and demoralizing, you know.
It's a roller coaster.
And I like everything in my life to make sense, you know. So I write this song with Lee Thomas Miller, which wrote fucking In Color. You know what I mean?
That's Jamie Johnson.
Yeah, Jamie Johnson. Mm-hmm. He's written a lot of big songs.
A huge song.
And another guy named Chris Utley. And I write this song, and They pitch it to Blake Shelton because Scott Hendricks loves it, which is his producer. And then Blake turned it down, I guess.
Fuck you know. That guy.
But anyways, I love Blake. I've always looked up to him. I don't know him personally, but he's
got a club here now.
Oh yeah,
it just opened.
Yeah. Well, fuck him. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck him.
Yeah. No. So, but anyways, I ran into his manager. My roommate is an artist that'll probably be coming through here soon.
Who's that?
Ella Langley.
Oh yeah, she's here in September.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my roommate. We've lived together for 4 years. She was a part of the first viral Dick Down in Dallas video. She's in the music video. She's like my little sister. Like the whole first 2 years of tour after Dick Down in Dallas, she opened pretty much every show.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love her voice, man.
Yeah, man. She's awesome. She's a great songwriter. She's got so many cool things cooking.
She was supposed to be here in May, and they just yesterday, I had a challenge on the date.
Oh, wow.
And they moved it because to September, which is right.
Yeah, she's on tour with Hardy and Wallen now.
Who the fuck
know,
are those
so,
guys?
Yeah.
But they've all played here.
But anyways, I like everything in my life to make sense, man. And I ran into the manager, and she said, well, he's only cutting five things, but just send him some songs. And I had that one song, and I was like, now what in my catalog could I send to fucking Tracy Lawrence?
Right.
You know, and I was like, I could send this song. And I sent it, and he said, man, you got a lyric sheet for that? And I was like, yeah. He was like, now I'm only cutting five things, but I really like this song. I didn't hear anything. He hits me up like a couple of days before Thanksgiving. He's like, hey, man, I'm having my annual turkey fry in Nashville. Come drop a turkey, you know, do videos and whatever. I go, I see him, I shake his hand. He's like, oh, yeah, I cut your song, by the way. I'm going to send you a rough mix tonight or tomorrow. And I go home on Thanksgiving with a fucking rough cut of Tracy Lawrence singing one of my fucking songs that I wrote. And, you know, it's just like that relationship that was on and off for 3 years came to an end. And it was like, you know, I bought that fucking $20,000 kayak for a reason. I went through that fucking dumb relationship for a reason. It wasn't all for nothing.
Right.
You know?
You got a Tracy Lawrence cut.
I got a Tracy Lawrence cut. And no matter what happens in my life, I can always say that, you know?
It's neat. Whenever, do you know Jeremy McComb?
No.
He owns a venue in Idaho called Nashville North.
Okay.
And he was out on the road with, who are the three comedians? Old school. Oh, my God.
The
Get her done,
yeah.
Those guys. He was out on the road with them.
Yeah.
And that's where he sowed his oats and understood the road. Well, he wrote this song called Didn't We, and Tracy cut it. Well, here's the funny part. Whenever I hear that song, I don't think about Tracy.
You think about your boy.
Think about my boy.
Yeah.
You got to cut with Tracy Lawrence. So when I hear that song, that's what I'm going to fucking sit back and do and just go, I'll be goddamned. That's fucking rad.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for the time.
This has been great. This has been great, dude. Anytime, man. Do you do repeat guests when they come back through?
Absolutely, as long as they're fucking cool.
Yeah, cool. We have all our fucking podcast gear. When you come to Nashville, you have to come do it.
I will. You know what? It's so funny that...
do our episode. We talk about all kinds of crazy shit.
You're supposed to, man. It's the idea. I think one of the funnest things that I did, the guys of After Midtown rolled through here, and...
They're not even a band anymore.
They're not. I play video games. I don't play video games. I play golf online.
Okay.
I don't play Call
like
of Duty.
2K.
Yeah. So I was just playing with Rotundo the other night. Mm-hmm. But he asked me a question while I was sitting in here, and it was the first time it ever happened, and it fucking blew me away because they learned something about me that was pretty neat. They said, here's the question. Name one album that you would want to go back and listen to for the first time again, all over again. And I answered it like that. And they're like, motherfucker, you're a fan of music.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was the neatest thing.
What's your
in the
answer?
World. It was the Cult, Love.
Oh, yeah.
Like, old school. I love Ian Astbury. I love fucking Billy Duffy playing guitars. I love Matt Sorum playing drums. Like, I'm a fan of music. And and you can go back to that. But I'm going to throw this one at you. I've been asking this one a little bit lately. Let's talk Mount Rushmore, okay? You got four guys. Give me your four country.
Dude, have you heard my song, Mount Rushmore?
No. You got one called? No, do you really?
Yeah, dude.
I have not.
Yeah, I'll go get my guitar and play it on your live right now.
Is it, I like to ask this question of like, who are the four guys you put on your Mount Rushmore that made you the artist that you are today?
Earnhardt.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Bill Dance in that Tennessee hat.
Okay.
And my old man, my dad.
Beautiful.
and Johnny Cash.
That's rad. I threw, I don't know if you know any guys over at Kerr, but Todd Thomas, guy that works over there, he asked me that question because we were shooting the shit, and I was with a couple other people, and I threw out there, Jake Worthington is someone I threw up there, dude. And they were like, wait, you put him up there? And I went, you watch, in 10 years, y'all are still going to know who the fuck Jake Worthington is.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
I just...
I know we're like running over time here, but
you're good.
My favorite Jake Worthington story that I have is the Key West Songwriter Festival.
What happened?
I was fucking on the street, dude. The first time I went down there, my tour manager at the time was like, man, you need to put some sunscreen on. I was like, man, I like to get like a good base, you know, and then put sunscreen. I'm over there riding around my fat ass nose t-shirt on, dude. I got so sunburned, dude. Like, people are coming up to you like, hey, buddy, how's it going? Oh. You know?
Right.
But I'm just out there I'm on the fucking sidewalk, and I look over my shoulder, and somebody's yelling at me, and Jake's sitting at a restaurant on the patio by himself. He's like, hey, Trey, what's up, man? And then he came over there. He's like, hey, man, I just want to tell you, dude, I know a lot of people know you for that Dig Down in Dallas song, but you put out this song called Little Tired Man, and I just want to let you know that's some real-ass shit.
Coming from him.
And I was just like, dude, thank you so much, man. So good, dude.
I sat in here with him. He's played here 2 times.
Yeah.
And I sat in here with him, and I like to say if I owned Urban Dictionary and I could pull off everything that's on there and type in country AF, I just put a picture of his ass because that's what the fuck he is, man. Yeah. There is no other person that I've met yet that's more country than him. Like in his songwriting and his just the way he carries himself.
Sweet as the day is long.
You wouldn't even know.
So nice.
You wouldn't even I mean, like, I'm sure he's been through some shit. I didn't even realize he was on one of those songwriting show. I mean, The Voice,
dude. Yeah. Baby faced as fuck.
Well, I mean, I go back and I look
at it. But he crushed it, man.
He did.
You know, and then the next time I saw him, he was with Josh Ward at Exit In, not Exit In, but Third and Lindsley in Nashville. And I was like, wow, dude, this is that kid. Holy shit. He's really fucking good.
He is phenomenal. First album, if you could go back and listen to again all over again, what would it be? And get that same fucking kick in the ass that you got the first time you heard it.
What would it be?
You ain't no fan of music. It's taking you too long.
Yeah, dude. I mean, there's just so much shit. I'd probably just fucking go back through all Hank Jr. shit and listen to that all over again.
It's badass.
That's high school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the Cult was my high school. I'm old. Yeah. Thanks again for the time.
Yeah, man. Thank you.